The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to Backstory. Let's Hear It on Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield and 88.1 WSBR Lee with Roberta McCulloch-Dews. Thanks for tuning in. So today we have with us Dawn Morin. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes.
Perfect. Co-editor of the Autobiography and Sermons of the Reverend Samuel Harrison, 1818 to 1900. And her professional experience includes working in libraries and local history archives, where she developed a strong foundation in historical research and preservation. Additionally, for the past 20 years, she has specialized in genealogy research, helping individuals and families explore and document their family histories. Dawn, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
I love, love, love history. And, you know, I have to just let you know that in some previous episodes of Backstory, we did have your co-editor of this book, Dr. Frances Jones Sneed. She joined us for a great conversation on not only Reverend Harrison, but also some other great points of Berkshire history. So I'm looking forward to hearing all about you and what is your driver when it comes to history and why you're so passionate about it. So let's get started. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, perfect. All right. So, you know, Dawn, your love of history is truly evident in your life's work. When, you know, anyone who takes the time to really research and look at what you've done, they can see that history has been a through line. Could you talk a little bit about what was the moment or moments in your life growing up that made you realize that history was for you?
Well, it actually hit me when I got married and had my children. And I had a kind of an interest in the Civil War period, and I had joined a couple study groups about Civil War history. And I got to thinking, I wonder if anybody in my family had been a part of the Civil War in any way, shape, or form. So that kind of got me into doing genealogy. And that became more meaningful having had my children. And the more I discovered about my own family and this, you know, the small connections I had into history, it just kind of filled me up and I wanted to keep learning more and more. And I went back to school in my early 40s to get a bachelor's degree at, here in MCLA. They had a great history program. So I dove right into that. And at the time, I don't know if they still have it, but at the time they had a local history minor, which my experience in doing genealogy research kind of fit right into the local history kind of aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And then I had taken several classes with Frances Jones Sneed, and she got me involved in some local community projects. And that's how I got involved with the Samuel Harrison Society as well.
Uh-huh. So if we can backtrack a little bit, because I'm curious, when you were doing your research into your family, did you uncover things that shocked you, surprised you?
I did find on my mother's side, I had two great grandfathers. Two had served in the Civil War.
Okay.
One had actually served 3 years and was at the Battle of Gettysburg. And then the other grandfather had also served for 3 years. He had actually been wounded and I don't think seriously, but then had gotten transferred into a different unit, but he had served out the 3 years as well. And then on my father's side, I was able to trace some involvement to the Revolutionary War period as well. So
that's pretty amazing,
yeah,
Dawn.
It is. It's exciting. Yeah.
Especially considering a lot that's happening right now with the 250th birthday
right,
of the country,
right.
There's so much there. And to know that you have this arsenal of personal family history that you can dovetail into.
Yes. To me, I always felt like your personal history with your family also fits into the overall greater history of our country and even the world, depending on, where your family came from. And you connect into these great moments in time by doing your family research. You can find those little nuggets of,
So I have a funny question here. Do you ever watch Finding Your Roots with
I
Dr.
watch it
Hanson?
all the
Okay.
time, all the time. Even the reruns, I watch it anytime I catch it.
So at the end, there's always the big reveal when he has the book and he says, please open the book and tell me what you find. So with you and the research that you've done, is there such a book that you have in your home where your family at any time can look in this big book and see the history?
Yes. To me, as you're researching, it's not just about finding, oh, they were born on this date, they married on this date, they died on this date. You want to fill in the details of their lives, which you can find through various other records. And there's so many resources online today where you can have access to these records. Back in the day, I was writing letters and sending checks and asking people for help, and a lot of it's online now. And I like to see, like in the book that I created for my family, I included all the pictures of the documents or pictures of whatever I found. I included it so that it's not just a narrative, but it's also visual.
I think so many people, you're absolutely right. There was a time when, before we had access to so many pathways to get information, it was definitely seemed more limited. But now there's so many ways that people can pick up on clues to be able to tell the bigger and broader stories of their families. And I think that it's definitely something that more people are interested in knowing because, again, it ties back to their very beginnings, right? I wonder, I know that you took the knowledge that you gathered from MCLA and you went on to do a lot of things here in Berkshire County. And I know the relationship that you have with Dr. Joan Snead, that's a special one because you guys have your co-editors of this new book that is going to celebrate a launch on April 25th. But tell me a little bit about you gather this history, you have this education from MCLA, you're doing all this. And then the projects that you've done in Berkshire County, before we get into your work with the Samuel Harrison Society, what are some of the things that people may not know about you that you're proud to share?
Well, I was taking classes at MCLA, I got involved in a couple other local history projects, and one of them was I had taken a local history research methods class, which the background I had doing genealogy, I was kind of familiar with how to find local records and stuff, and we could research it on any topic we wanted. And I'm not from around here, but my husband is, so I wasn't real familiar with the, deep history back then. So when we moved here, our realtor had given us a little book on, I think it was North Adams Old Home Week or something like that. And I'm flipping through it, trying to find a topic to research, and there was this one page, and it said, North Adams was the ballooning capital of the world. And I'm like, what is that? So I dove into researching that, and it became quite an extensive research project. I was able to find a lot, and it was basically about the beginnings of ballooning, like around the turn of the century, 19.
Like the hot air balloons.
Yeah, back then it was gas. So, between North Adams and Pittsfield, there was kind of like a rivalry between who would supply the gas to have these balloon ascensions, and there were races, and it was quite a it was I was I found quite a bit of information, and I turned in an extensive research paper. And at the time, someone had encouraged me to maybe publish it as a local history monograph, but I just never did. And with doing the Samuel Harrison project and having this work kind of published, it's kind of like renewed my interest in maybe going back to that to pursue it. But and then I also did another research project on the history of the Civilian Conservation Corps, and the work that they did to put people back to work during the Depression, and what they were able to do locally here in Berkshire County to help create parks, maintain the parks, the ski areas. They helped put people to work during the Depression era, and so that was a fun little project as well. And I've kind of throughout my coursework at MCLA, I kind of got my other research projects had a tendency to be towards like African American research topics. So, and when I was asked to be part to help with the Samuel Harrison project, I was asked back then, like almost 20 years ago, to help annotate the autobiography. So I had started it back then and then had picked it up recently when Francis was eager to try and get something published.
Was there something that you found that drew you to this particular area of history that you found especially interesting, especially when it came to, because I don't think that a lot of people, if you're outside of the history world, the deep history of Reverend Samuel Harrison, it's deep. It's deep. I
It
mean,
is.
it goes right back to, you think about pre-Civil War, you think about that time, you think about all that he's done, and we have such history here. But was there something in particular that drew you to the history of individuals like Samuel Harrison and others?
I just there's so much deep history for African Americans in general, and a lot of it is like especially local type figures. Sometimes their history is not as prominent as other individuals. And to help bring to life a story like Samuel Harrison's, who a lot of people don't know who he is or what he did, to me, that's really the heart of doing history research, is bringing these kind of stories to life. Like, this was an actual person and he did these amazing things. And now he's being recognized in a way that I hope he would be proud, to see how many people care about him and his life and the things that he was able to do.
So Dawn, in my research, I found something that you had shared with, I want to say, the Harrison Society in 2025. It was Reverend Harrison's account of his own life in a newspaper, and he wrote, it was in the Eagle, and he basically said that he was writing on the behest of, I guess people had encouraged him, it was his birthday, and he was writing basically his life story. And it was really, really interesting because you talk about he was a real person. And when I read that piece that he wrote himself, that came, he basically told his story, but that was so powerful.
Right, and that article was a prelude, I think, to what he actually ended up writing in 1899 in his autobiography. And some of the things that are addressed in that article, some are not mentioned in the autobiography while others are. In particular, the comments he made about his mother, I thought was so touching.
I also thought it was touching that he was celebrated by so many in the community. It seemed to go across color lines. It seemed like he just had, there was such a deep love for Reverend Harrison. And in your research, what do you think, where do you think that came from, this deep love that so many had for him?
I believe he was a very kind individual, and the things he spoke about, even through his sermons. Yes, he, had this the spiritual aspect about the things he talked about, but then the way he was encouraging, civil rights. And pointing out racial injustice in the community and broader in the country. And I just think he had so many friends. He had abolitionist friends. He had friends in government. And he even his picture, he looks like a kind individual, like a loving father type. And I just feel like he was probably, a great person to know, and I think that shows in his work and the way people feel about him now, even.
Well, I definitely want to delve deeper into that portion of it because obviously, if you're editing his autobiography, you know, there's autobiography as well as the sermons, you're in his work, you're in his writings. And so I want to get into that a bit later. But I want to also, before we get into that portion of it, when you started the work with the Samuel Harrison Society, and your background, I know you have the expertise from especially the legal expertise that you were able to bring to the Samuel Harrison Society to help them through the restoration project. Did you ever think, Dawn, where we are today, back when you first started with all the work and there was things in concept and ideas? Did you ever think that we would be at this point today where the house looks the way it looks and that it's stable and there's this level of stability around it?
I felt the mission was strong and the people were committed to the project, and back when I saw it before I left the area was probably around 2009. So they had gotten the go ahead to start the renovations on the house, and I think they were doing the archaeology work around the house then. And I actually just saw it this week with Francis. I was able to actually see it. I hadn't seen the finished
Oh,
house,
wow.
and I got to peek inside, and it looks amazing. And I think as they go forward, you know, turning it into a history center, a learning center, where people can go and even study and learn even more about Samuel Harrison and the broader, you know, topics that, you know, surround his life. I'm happy to see like the vision come to life.
I think that's a wonderful thing. It's like full circle. And I always tell folks that to know that you have this little house that's tucked away on this street that holds so much history, not just the house itself, but those who lived in the house and what they meant for history. And that to me is huge. And right now you can pass it and not even know
Right.
that so much happened during that time. So, you know, let's fast forward now to your relationship and your work with Dr. Joan Sneed. Talk a little bit about that and how it's been, because she's so esteemed and renowned. How has it been for you to work in partnership with her on the projects that you have in the past, as well as this one with this the launch of the book?
She's a great partner and she's a great mentor. She always has been. She has a vision in her head of, you know, what she wants to put out and produce. And like I said, I had started the annotations on the autobiography years ago, and I had gotten to, at the time, a stopping point with it, and I had handed it back to her. And then she reached out to me, I don't, maybe 2 years ago, year and a half ago, and said she was ready to publish it. She also wanted to include the sermons. So I went back to see what new information I could find on the autobiography, and then annotated the sermons as well. And it's just a matter of, you know, kind of filling in the picture of what he talks about. And you know, I could always ask her if I'm, you know, on the right track with the information we're, you know, finding and stuff. And it was great too, like some of the new information I found, especially on the slave origins for Samuel Harrison. It was very exciting, and she was like the first person I would call, and we'd get so excited.
Are
And
you able to share what you found, or is that something that we should have as a teaser for the book?
It is spelled out in the book, and research is continuing because I feel like there's even more information to find. But an interesting note about the autobiography, it's not typical autobiography, maybe what you might think. It's only like a little 45-page little pamphlet that he wrote. And one of the interesting and, you know, a little bit frustrating things was that he leaves some specifics out. Like when he talks about his family, his mother and father, and he talks about an uncle, he doesn't name them by name. So we had to go and find that information. And he does talk about being born into slavery. And he does, the one key piece of information that he does provide is the name of the enslaver. So having that little nugget of information was crucial to find out anything about the slave origins. And so recently I was able to, with the name of the enslaver, I was able to go back into the deed records, because now a lot of them are online. They weren't back necessarily 20 years ago, but so I was able to go back online and find the actual deed records where his not only his mother, but his mother's parents as well. So it goes back two more generations, and find kind of like how they were purchased and sold, and the different families they lived with and where they were from. And so it we did kind of we did include that in this book that we're going to have presented. And there's still a lot of information to be found. And so it's not going to stop with this once this book comes out, we're going to keep going and see what else we can find.
Dawn, how long did this process, the sifting, the research, all of that, how long does this process take, or how long have you been at this work for this particular project?
It's been almost two years, I think, where I've restarted the research. And it is time consuming, but I love it. So it's exciting. And every time you find a piece of information, once you keep going. So there's nights I'm working on it, and then I'm like, okay, I'm gonna stop here and go to bed for the night. And then I'm laying in bed thinking about things, and I get back up. So before I know it, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. And but I find all this good stuff. And like I said, luckily a lot more information is online than it was before. So I was able to find some good things.
Wow. Well, Dawn, we're going to take a quick 15-second break. It may not be that long, but we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.
You're tuned to Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield and 88.1 WSBR Lee. Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts, the Northern Berkshire Early Intervention Program is now accepting applications for an occupational therapist to support child development, empower families, and change futures. 2026 graduates welcome to apply. Apply today at ucpwma.org.
Hey, it's Sean from WTBR-FM. Whether you just found this station for the first time or you've been listening for years, you might not know everything about WTBR-FM. Want to find out more? It's easy. Just go to WTBRFM.com. You can find full programming schedules, listen to the station anywhere in the world, subscribe to our podcasts, and even learn to create a program of your own. And of course, donate to the station. That's WTBRFM.com. Check it out today.
What is One Berkshire? We're the voice of the business community, promoting the region and supporting local business. How do we do it? Through marketing, networking, sponsorships, and advocacy. Whether it's promotion to travelers and second homeowners, or opportunities to network with your neighbors and raise your profile, we've got you covered. So join today. Visit oneberkshire.com. That's the number one, berkshire.com.
The preceding public service announcement courtesy of WTBR and Lee Bank.
Larry Cracker here on WTBR, and I want to tell you about my show, Nothing But Old 45s. I have an absolute blast playing my records here on WTBR for 2 hours every Monday morning, and I'll crank out the best of top 40 oldies and classic rock Mondays here on WTBR, the home of Nothing But Old 45s since 2014. Nothing But Old 45s, Mondays from 10 a.m. until noon, here on 89.7 WTBR-FM for the love of radio.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College.
free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu.
And from Sandrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Massachusetts. Retractable awnings, retractable screen, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available. Online at Sandrini.com.
For my guest joining us today, we have with us Dawn Morin, and she is, I just want to call you like a noted historian. I feel like you're a historian and genealogist, but you know, what you should know about Dawn is that she's also the co-editor of the Autobiography and Sermons of the Reverend Samuel Harrison, 1818 through 1900, and she is here to talk a little bit about the work that she has been doing throughout her career, as well as the work around this recent, you know, book that she has co-edited with Dr. Francis Jones Sneed, also a noted professor who taught at MCLA, and all around just great individual. So, Dawn, we're talking about the process that you can easily feel like you go down the rabbit hole. One clue leads to another clue, leads to another clue, leads to another, and it's interesting because you kind of know kind of like the path, like, you know where to look. I often think, would the amateur historian, would they kind of know like how to decipher the clues, or is that something that you feel like, you know, they had to sort of like school taught you? Or
is this,
yeah.
No, I think if you like, as far as genealogy goes, if you start like with your own history and you work your way back, and you start looking through, you know, basic records that you know you can find, you know, birth, death certificates, you know, going through the newspapers, they're easily searched online a lot of times now too. And then, you know, you can go into deeper records, you know, like the deed records. There's a lot of good information to be found in deed records, and just, you know, start with finding the basics. And then as you get further back in time and say, like, you know, you find that maybe you have a grandfather that lived or served in the military during, you know, World War One or World War Two or whatever, or, you know, you find those records and then go and just keep going back and back, and then connect into history as you note your timeline. And once you start digging into the records, you can be surprised at how much you can find.
I think, again, when I think about that show Finding Your Roots, it's interesting because you're absolutely right. The pathways for some can be so easy, and then others it's a little bit challenging because you might hit a roadblock and you're like, ugh, all right, I'm, you know, it feels like, where do I go from here, because the information just seems to end at some point. And I think that's where now there seems to be more channels and more areas of opportunities where people look for those specific clues to say, okay, maybe I can't find it in this document, which would maybe be a traditional document like a birth certificate or marriage certificate, but maybe I can find it in, like you said, like you have these, you know, property listings and things like that, where unfortunately those are also areas, you know, sources of information and provide clues as to, you know, the past. So there's so much available, Dawn, and you're like all in it. I'm curious as to, as you are reading, because not only are you looking for clues and you're gaining insights, but you're absorbed in the world of Samuel Harrison. You've been absorbed in that world for the last 2 years, specifically, not like you weren't before,
but
in a deeper way. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on, as you've been in it and reading and absorbing, the relevancy in today's time and the things that you've been gleaning from his writing, not only about himself, but also the state of the country. Right. What are some of the themes that you have gleaned and have stayed with you?
Well, I think in his sermons, you get a real sense of He lived during the Civil War years and the Reconstruction years, and a lot of the things he talks about as far as the racial injustice and the advocacy for, African Americans, is still going on. It's similar struggles, similar, trying to advance to a better place, and the way he writes about them, you get a sense of what he lived through, and you think it's not so different even now for people. And I think it gives you a sense of connectivity, not just you're here in the present, but there's a connection to the past as well, that you
Did
connected
you,
to.
what, when you think about the various sermons, was there one that is your favorite?
Well, we have three that were published that you can read. They're included in the book, and all three are kind of one is specifically relates to like the Civil War period, and one relates to like the history of Pittsfield, which I'm not from around here, so it's interesting to see his thoughts on what the community was like back then. And they're all great. They're all are great readings, and a lot to be learned from them.
So when you think about, excuse me, the reader who will consume this and take this in, what are some of the things that the themes, I know you mentioned a few, but some takeaways that readers might, after they finish reading it, put it down and say, wow, that was fill in the blanks. What do you think they may come away with, especially as they attend this upcoming book launch and hopefully they avail themselves of these great books? But what do you think some of the takeaways will be for them?
One of the things too that amazes me throughout the works is his connection to like a lot of prominent people during the times as well, like his abolitionist friends and other people involved in the ministry, his connections to history throughout his lifetime. I feel like are pretty impressive, and just his work, his you got a sense of his dedication to not only his ministry, but like I said before, like the causes that he feels so passionate about comes across in his writings.
With you mentioned a few things, Don, in just how learned Reverend Harrison was. Could you paint a little picture about that background, what the things that helped to shape and inform him to be the person that could write these great messages? What were some of the things in his life and in his background that helped to make him so impressive?
Well, I think in his autobiography, he does credit his mother for his upbringing, encouraging him to read, become literate, and to kind of steer him towards a religious life. He does talk about that in the beginning, he kind of maybe was a little naughty. But his mother helped steer him, and then he talks about his uncle that was also a minister. He was apprenticed as a shoemaker to his uncle, who had lived in Philadelphia. And at a certain point, when he received his calling to the ministry, he wanted to get more education. And he went on that mission to I think he went to the at the time it was called the Peterborough Manual Labor School that was run by the famous abolitionist Gerrit Smith. And then from there he went to Western Reserve College. So I feel like once he received that calling, he became dedicated and driven and just moved his life in the direction that he wanted it to go, and he was quite successful at it.
Very impressive. And I think, again, going back to the stories of these figures that can seem, you read about them and you're like, wow, they've done so much. And just as how you were explaining, like, even when he was growing up, like, he was just like us. Like, you know, I mean, you said he was naughty, but, you know, but the thing is that it humanizes these figures that we look back and we read about and we think, oh my goodness, the monumental achievements and all of the things that they've done. But they start out, they are regular people
Right.
with real stories that can be accessed.
And if you think about it too, this was during when he went decided to go to school and study the ministry and everything. This was 1830, 1840. So this was even before the Civil War. And the family that were his enslavers, he says, emancipated them. I think by 1827 they were basically free. They had started in Savannah, Georgia, and then the family moved to New York City, and the Harrisons moved with them, so even and stayed with them to work with them even after they were free. So he wasn't, even though he was born into slavery, he wasn't necessarily a slave for his,
Yeah, he mentioned that in his column for the newspaper. There was something like he said there was some circumstance around him. There was a line that he mentioned that added some kind of like doubt as to why he would be listed as such. I think he even was curious about that.
Right. And there's still a little confusion about what exactly happened, because he was under the impression that they were given emancipation papers, but I'm not entirely sure that was accurate. But when they moved to New York, I do believe it was the intention of the enslaver to that was the name was Bolton. I do believe it was their intention to free them, but I think it was probably more so New York abolished slavery. And by 1827, slavery was not allowed in the state of New York. So I think that might have been ultimately how they got their freedom. But that's one of the things, we're still researching. There's still quite a few areas where we would like to get more information. And that's definitely one of them. And I think because he would have only been, I think, maybe 9 years old when that happened. Because and it's interesting, in 1827, that's also the year he went to apprentice with his uncle in Philadelphia as a shoemaker. So, yeah, we'd like to find
Interesting.
more information about that.
Well, I'm curious, Dawn, because you know I can't help but think for the novice historian who is taken with history and says, you know, I don't know where to start, but I'm really interested. What would you say to that person, in terms of just getting started?
It started with their own history.
Well, I would say, you know, maybe there's a topic because I think that there's family history that can open up its own channels of
Right.
certificates. And but if there's a specific topic, and this is again for like just as how you were mentioning, you read about like North Adams and
Right.
ballooning, and you're like, oh, what else is there? What would you say to that person who's listening and they're like, I like history too, and I like certain topics, but I don't really know where to start. Is it a Google search? What would you say to that person?
I mean, I would definitely say just start with something that you're interested in or something that you have questions about. And if it's a local history topic, you'd be surprised at maybe how much there is just in your own community. You can go to your local library. A lot of local libraries have their own archives for local history. If you have like a college in your area, like we have MCLA here, they have their own archive of information. Check the surrounding communities as well. Go to the town clerk's office and say, what about this? Once you start digging, you'll start to find more things, and just always question, what else can I find? Or if you find a piece of information that leads you in another direction, just follow that and just keep digging. And I would have to say, there's always people that are willing to help you. And you find the right people to collaborate with, especially, it makes it even more fun.
Well, I think that this is a perfect segue because as we're talking about research and digging, you are a research contributor for the National Endowment for the Humanities Project for the African American Heritage in the Upper Housatonic Valley initiative. Talk a little bit about that project and what you uncovered, because as you were researching and learning, I'm sure there are things that you uncovered, along the way. So what were some of the things that stood out for you?
I kind of got involved towards the end of that project, and I had, because of my experience doing genealogy research, I was researching in the census record, and I was able to find, the African American people living in the area, and there's a lot of information in those census records, so we were able to break it down by their occupations, where they lived, how old they were. I think specifically, like, the occupations shed a lot of light into what the community was like for them.
What were some of those occupations?
Some of them, it was a long time ago.
Like farming, maybe, or
Farming, barbers,
barbers, maybe blacksmiths, or
yeah,
maybe not.
sorry, I can't remember off
And
the
that's
top of my
okay,
head, but
and that
it is in the book. It is
it
in
is in the book. And the
the
reason why
book
I
that
say that is because in one of my previous conversations with Dr. Joan Sneed, we were talking about just some of the history and some of the different. We were in Pittsfield, and then we went into Dalton, and then we went into Great Barrington, and a little bit into Sheffield. And one of the things in Dalton that amazed me was we were talking about the Fitchhugh's house. And that little, it's like a little yellow house, but we're talking about even where they have the trail right now, that there's this big trail. She said there was a community that existed where these woods are now. And I said, no way, because there's no marker, there's no nothing. I've walked those trails. I had no idea that, like, people live there. And it was shocking. There was a lot of feelings, to be honest. And I wonder, when you were doing this research, in addition to the occupations, were there other things that stayed with you as you were learning about? And I know you came in at a different time in the project, but it has presented itself as such a treasure trove of information that may not have necessarily been sort of collected. At once. What stood out for you?
I think the importance of that work, bringing those stories to life, I think they refer to it as like the buried history of African Americans or something like that. Those little stories of just the people in the community, they weren't famous necessarily, but they're what they lived through, what they contributed to the community is important. And I think with that trail guide, it really brings all of that to people's attention. And it's a rich history with a lot of different people. And they're actually working on an update to that as well.
Are
So,
they really?
yes.
Is there anything that you can share? Sounds like not yet.
They're working
But
on an updated trail guide, and they want it to be like a smaller handheld kind of book that you can take with you and be able to explore the community and see these
okay.
places and go there and visit. And yeah,
Awesome.
it's an updated guide though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm almost assuming that maybe there would be like a digital component as well, so
Yeah, I
that.
think they do want to do a digital version of it.
Yeah. I know back in 2008, you had participated. You helped the Samuel Harrison Society with one of these walks that were connected to like this bigger project. When you, and I don't know if you were actually there during the walk or you were behind the scenes of helping to put the walk together, but do you remember that time? I know that there was a lot of hope that these walks would continue and sort of, just have a continuing place. I'm not quite sure if there is that regularity, but do you recall how it was when you were a part of that and what that did for the people who are a part of learning about this information right here in Pittsfield?
Yeah, I think they did some guided walk. It was,
Yep, that's it.
I
Yeah.
remember Francis doing one. And I feel like that's kind of helpful to bring the information to life for people. Not, you can go on your own and see these places, but to have somebody point it out and give a little more detail, I think that was a great idea. I'm not sure what the status of those that is now, or
I'm not sure
if
either.
it got incorporated into the Housatonic Trail Guide, maybe. I'm not
Yeah.
sure, or if that was something that, yeah, I don't recall exactly. It might have been part of something the Samuel Harrison Society was doing, or it could have been part of the oh, I don't remember.
Well, it was Don, in all fairness, it was 2008. It was a while ago.
Right.
But so please don't,
Ask Francis about that. It's a good question for Francis.
please don't stress over that point. But I think that the most important thing is that it was, you're absolutely right about guided walks. I was actually just telling a friend, I said, because I'm not from here. I grew up in New York, at the Bronx specifically. Going to school in New York City, in my college years, it was interesting because, I can't even believe I used to say, there's nothing to do. However, I'm a big history buff myself, and it's interesting that I'm actually exploring a few guided walks that I want to go back to New York and participate in as a quote unquote tourist. But I think that it's one thing to read about history, and then it's another thing to actually like go on the walk and see the building, see the site, see where people they lived. If you have the good fortune that the building is still standing, you can actually sort of like envision what was. But still, it's amazing. And I think that I'm looking forward to the next iteration of what this the updated trail information and what that can look like, because I think a lot of people enjoy that too for this region.
There's a great collaboration among the local historians here, and they're really dedicated to bringing the local history to the people in the community.
Well, speaking of historians, do you have favorite historians that you look up to? And they don't have to just be local. They could be in the realm of the history world, but are there individuals that you're just like, I really love their work and they're pretty awesome?
My interest is pretty general, because my focus is mostly on genealogy. That's the
Yeah.
part that gets me the most excited.
That's why you like Dr. Henry Louis Gates, because you instantly perked up and started.
I love him. I like to reach out, especially if I'm working on a project. I
Yeah.
Reaching out to other people, even if I don't know them, in whatever community I'm trying to research, and just collaborating with other people. And I find that most other historians are pretty happy to help, or try to point you in the right direction anyway. And
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of my interest in history is on the local level of whatever I'm working on.
Do you, Dawn, do you ever are you do you teach others like young students and like have you gotten into that work?
I have done a couple genealogy workshops over the years, and I did develop a it was supposed to be a like a 2-week summer workshop for parents with their like teen tween slash teen to try and get them excited about their family history. It would have been a good project, but for COVID. But I feel like if you can get them interested, one way to get young kids interested in the broader history is for them to focus on their history and then see how it connects. Like I said, like finding your grandfather who fought in the Civil War, or just anything that connects into history, then it's not some abstract concept of,
Real.
oh, something that happened, so long ago, why should I care? You should care because your family lived through it or participated, or it's part of your story as well. It's not just some like, oh, I have to learn about, the Civil War or Revolutionary War or whatever it may be. There's connections to be made.
Well, it's real. And Dawn, I also like to say, like, we will be history one day. I mean, one day someone will be reading about us.
I'll get this book and say, who's this Dawn Warren? I gotta find out.
So, we in real time we get to do our work and down the road somewhere someone will read about you and say, wow, she was really great and talk about all of the good things. So, history, it's not the static thing, it's fluid. It's fluid and everyone does their part in the process. So, I know we're going to be wrapping it up soon, but as we think about, will you be at the event for the book?
Yes.
Okay,
Yeah, I'm
perfect.
up here for it. Yes. I
Perfect.
actually live in Florida, so it came up for this big
I
event.
know it's like a big sacrifice coming up here with leaving all that nice weather.
It's kind of nice. I haven't been in the cold weather for quite a while. Like I said,
Did
my
you miss it?
family is from around here, so we have family that we can visit, and I was out in the snow the other day. I was quite excited.
Oh, I don't think I've heard that, but
I
I'll take it. Is there what would you say for folks who are like, I don't know if I should come out to this, this book launch event, if you had to just share sort of the why as we're closing out, what would you tell folks in terms of just coming out to this event? What's the appeal and what will they get out of it?
Well, I think the appeal is to learn more about the Reverend Samuel Harrison. Like, if they've heard about him in the community, but they might not know everything about him. Like, we've really tried to fill in a paint a better picture based on these documents we have of him, and just come out and learn about him. He's important. He was important to the what he lived through, and you can connect to it, relate to it from today. And you can go visit his house and have this book that really the autobiography and the sermons are his words. We just kind of filled in the picture with some more detail. And it's not difficult to understand or anything. And the book has been a beloved project between Francis and I, and we're happy to be able to get more information out to the people and help them learn about Samuel Harrison and how important he is to the community here.
Thank you, Dawn. Thank you. For those who are interested in attending the event, it will be held on Saturday, April 25th at 4 p.m. at Second Congregational Church. That is 50 Anoda Street in Pittsfield. And if you would like more information on Samuel Harrison, visit samuelharrison.org, and you can get more information about him, as well as the Samuel Harrison Society and the work that they're doing to preserve his legacy. Don, is there anything else that we didn't talk about that you just want to mention before we close out?
Yeah, I think we covered quite a bit.
Well,
I'm
you know, can
excited for Saturday. I hope
yeah.
to see a good crowd there, and the book will be available if people are interested in purchasing it. But we're happy to answer questions and meet anybody that's interested in attending.
And so, normally what I do with my guests, I will say, tell me one word to describe you. But because we talked a little bit, our focus was really on the Reverend Samuel Harrison. I'm going to ask you if you had to choose one word to describe him,
Oh, to describe him. Okay.
what would that be?
That's tough. I don't know if I can settle on one
You can get two
word.
words, Dawn.
I think he was brave, and I think he was passionate and compassionate.
All right.
Yeah.
See, I made an exception just for you. You got three.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dawn. It has truly been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us today. And for our listeners, you've been listening to Backstory. Let's hear it on Pittsfield Community Radio. Thank you very much and have a great day.